Maybe for a while, David said, but not forever. But you and she...
She and I, he sighed. Shay changes her mind pretty quickly, you know?
What do you mean?
The first time she wanted to come to the smoke was back in spring, when Croy and the others came.
She told me. She chickened out, right?
David nodded. I always figured she would. She just wanted to run away because her friends were. If she stayed in the city, she'd be left all alone.
Tally thought of her friendless days after Paris's operation.
Yeah, I know that feeling. But she never showed up that night, which happens. I was really surprised to see her in the ruins a few weeks ago, suddenly convinced she wanted to leave the city forever. And she was already talking about bringing a friend, even though she hadn't said a word to you yet. He shook his head. I almost told her just to forget about it, to stay in the city and become pretty.
She took a deep breath. Everything would have been so much easier if David had done exactly that. Tally would be pretty right now, high up in a party tower with Paris and Shay and a bunch of new friends at this very moment. But the image in her mind didn't give Tally the thrill it usually did. It just fell flat, like a song she'd heard too many times. David squeezed her hand. I'm glad I didn't. Something made Tally say, Me too. The words amazed her, because somehow they felt true. She looked at David closely, and the feeling was still there. She could see that his forehead was too high, that a small scar cut a white stroke through his eyebrow. And his smile was pretty crooked, really. But it was as if something had changed inside Tally's head, something that had turned his face pretty to her. The warmth of his body cut the autumn chill, and she moved closer.
Shay's tried hard to make up for chickening out that first time, and for giving you directions when she promised me she wouldn't, he said. Now she's decided the smoke is the greatest place in the world, and that I'm the best person in the world for bringing her here.
She really likes you, David.
And I really like her, but she's just not...
Not what?
Not serious. Not you.
Tally turned away, her head swimming.
She knew she had to keep her promise now, or she never would.
Her fingers went to the pendant. David.
Yeah, I noticed that necklace. After your smile, it was the second thing I noticed about you.
You know someone gave it to me.
That's what I figured.
And I told them about the smoke.
He nodded. I figured that, too.
You're not mad at me?
He shrugged. You never promised me anything. I hadn't even met you.
But you still... David was gazing into her eyes, his face glowing again.
Tally looked away, trying to drown her uncanny, pretty feelings in the sea of white weeds.
David sighed softly.
You left a lot of things behind when you came here. Your parents, your city, your whole life.
And you are starting to like the smoke. I can tell.
You get what we're doing here in a way that most runaways don't.
I like the way it feels here. But I might not... stay.
He smiled. I know. Listen, I'm not rushing you. Maybe whoever gave you that heart is coming. Maybe not. Maybe you'll go back to them. But in the meantime, could you do something for me?
Sure. I mean, what?
He stood, offering her his hand. I'd like you to meet my parents. The secret.
They descended the ridge on the far side, down a steep, narrow path. David led her quickly in the darkness, finding footing on the almost invisible trail without hesitation. It was all Tally could do to keep up. The whole day had been one shock after another, and now, to top it all off, she was going to meet David's parents.
That was the last thing she'd expected after showing him her pendant and telling him she hadn't kept the smoke a secret. His reactions were different from those of anyone she'd ever met before. Maybe it was because he'd grown up out here, away from the customs of the city. Or maybe he was just different. They left the familiar ridgeline far behind, and the mountain rose steeply to one side. Your parents don't live in the smoke?
No, it's too dangerous.
Dangerous how?
It's part of what I was telling you your first day here, in the railroad cave.
About your secret? How you were raised in the wild? David stopped for a moment, turning back to face her in the darkness.
There's more to it than that.
What?
I'll let them tell you. Come on.
A few minutes later, a small square filled with faint light appeared, hovering in the darkness of the mountainside. Tally saw that it was a window, a light inside glowing deep red through a closed curtain. The house seemed half buried, as if it had been wedged into the mountain. When they were still a stone's throw away, David stopped.
Don't want to surprise them. They can be jumpy, he said, then shouted, Hello!
A moment later, a doorway opened, letting out a shaft of light. David? The woman's voice called. The door opened wider until the light spilled across them.
Az, it's David.
As they drew closer, Tally saw that she was an old ugly. Tally couldn't tell if she was younger or older than the boss, but she certainly wasn't as terrifying to look at. Her eyes flashed like a pretty's, and the lines of her face disappeared into a welcoming smile as she gathered her son into a hug.
Hi, Mom.
And you must be Tally. Nice to meet you. She wondered if she should shake hands or something. In the city, you never spent much time with other uglies' parents, except when you hung out at friends' houses during school breaks. The house was much warmer than the bunkhouse, and the timber floors weren't nearly as rough, as if David's parents had lived there for so long, their feet had worn them smooth. The house somehow felt more solid than any building in the smoke. It was really cut into the mountain, she saw now. One of the walls was exposed stone, glistening with some kind of transparent sealant.
Nice to meet you too, Tally, David's mother said.
Tally wondered what her name was. David always referred to them as Mom and Dad, words Tally hadn't used for Sol and Ellie since she was a littlie. A man appeared, shaking David's hand before turning to her.
Good to meet you, Tally.
She blinked, her breath catching, for a moment unable to speak. David and his father somehow looked alike. It didn't make any sense. There had to be more than 30 years between them, if his father really had been a doctor when David was born. But their jaws, foreheads, even their slightly lopsided smiles were all so similar.
Tally,
David said. Sorry, you look the same. David's parents burst into laughter, and Tally felt her face turning red.
We get that a lot, his father said. You city kids always find it a shock. But you know about genetics, don't you?
Sure. I know all about genes. I knew two sisters, uglies, who looked almost the same. But parents and children? That's just weird. David's mother forced a serious expression onto her face, but the smile stayed in her eyes. The features that we take from our parents are the things that make us different. A big nose, thin lips, high forehead, all the things that the operation takes away.
The preference toward the mean, his dad said.
Tally nodded, remembering school lessons. The overall average of human facial characteristics was the primary template for the operation. Sure, average-looking features are one of the things people look for in a face. But families pass on non-average looks, like our big noses, The man tweaked his son's nose, and David rolled his eyes. Tally realized that David's nose was much bigger than any pretty's. Why hadn't she noticed that before now? "That's one of the things you give up when you become pretty. The family knows," his mother said. "Az, why don't you turn up the heat?" Tally realized that she was still shivering, but not from the cold outside. This was all so weird. She couldn't get over the similarity between David and his father. "That's okay. It's lovely in here. Maddie," the woman said. "Shall we all sit down?" Az and Maddie apparently had been expecting them. In the front room of the house, four antique cups were set out on little saucers. Soon, a kettle began to whistle softly on an electric heater, and Az poured the boiling water into an antique pot, releasing a floral scent into the room. Tally looked around her. The house was unlike any other in the smoke. It was like a standard crumbly home, filled with impractical objects. A marble statuette stood in one corner, and rich rugs had been hung on the walls, lending their colors to the light in the room, softening the edges of everything. Maddie and Az must have brought a lot of things from the city when they ran away. And, unlike Uglies, who had only their dorm uniforms and other disposable possessions, the two had actually spent a lifetime collecting things before escaping the city. Tally remembered growing up surrounded by Sol's woodwork, abstract shapes fashioned from fallen branches she would collect from parks as a littlie. Maybe David's childhood hadn't been completely different from her own. "This all looks so familiar," she said. "David hasn't told you?" Maddie said. "Az and I come from the same city as you. If we'd stayed, we might have been the ones to turn you pretty."
"Oh, I guess so," Tally murmured.
"If they'd stayed in the city, there would have been no smoke, and Shay never would have run away." "David says that you made it all the way here on your own," Maddie said. She nodded. "I was following a friend of mine. She left me directions."
"And you decided to come alone? Couldn't you wait for David to come around again?"
"There wasn't time to wait," David explained. "She left the night before her 16th birthday."
"That's leaving things until the last minute," Az said.
"But very dramatic," Maddie said approvingly. "Actually, I didn't have much choice. I hadn't even heard of the smoke until Shay, my friend, told me she was leaving. That was about a week before my birthday."
"Shay? I don't believe we've met her," Az said.
Tally looked at David, who shrugged. He had never brought Shay here? She wondered for a moment what had really gone on between David and Shay.
"You certainly made up your mind quickly then," Maddie said.
Tally brought her mind back to the present. "I had to. I only had one chance."
"Spoken like a true smoky," Az said, pouring a dark liquid from the kettle into the cups. "Tea?"
Please. Tally accepted a saucer and felt the scalding heat through the thin, white material of the cup. Realizing that this was one of those smoky concoctions that burned your tongue, she sipped carefully. Her face twisted at the bitter taste.
Sorry,
I've never had tea before, actually.
Az's eyes widened. "Really? But it was very popular back when we lived there."
"I've heard of it, but it's more of a crumbly drink. Mostly only late pretties drink it."
Tally willed herself not to blush. Maddie laughed. "Well, we're pretty crumbly, so I guess it's okay for us."
"Speak for yourself, my dear."
"Try this," David said. He dropped a white cube into Tally's tea. The next time she drank, a sweetness had spread through it, cutting the bitterness. It was possible to sip the stuff now without grimacing.
"David's told you a little about us, I suppose," Maddie said.
"Well, he said you ran away a long time ago, before he was born."
"Oh, did he?"
Az said. The expression on his face was exactly like David's when a member of the railroad crew did something thoughtless and dangerous with a vibrasaw.
I didn't tell her everything, Dad, David said, just that I grew up in the wild.
You left the rest to us, Az said a bit stiffly.
Very good of you.
David held his father's gaze.
Tally came here to make sure her friend was okay. All the way here alone. But she might not want to stay.
We don't force anyone to live here, Maddie said.
That's not what I mean, David said. I think she should know, before she decides about going back to the city.
Tally looked from David to his parents, quietly amazed. The way they communicated was so strange. Not like uglies and crumblies at all. It was more like uglies arguing. Like equals.
I should know what?
She asked softly.
They all looked at her, Maddie and Az measuring her with their eyes.
The big secret, said Az. The one that made us run away almost 20 years ago.
One we usually keep to ourselves, Maddie said evenly, her eyes on David.
Tally deserves to know, David said, his eyes locked with his mother's. She'll understand how important it is.
She's a kid, a city kid.
She made it here alone, with only a bunch of gibberish directions to guide her.
Maddie scowled.
You've never been to a city, David. You have no idea how coddled they are. They spend their whole lives in a bubble.
She survived alone for 9 days, Mom. Made it through a brush fire.
Please, you two, Az interjected. She is sitting right here. Aren't you, Tally?
Yeah, I am, Tally said quietly. And I wish you'd tell me what you're talking about.
I'm sorry, Tally, Maddie said, but this secret is very important and very dangerous.
Tally nodded her head, looking down at the floor.
Everything out here is dangerous.
They were all silent for a moment. All Tally heard was the tinkle of Az stirring his tea.
See? David said finally. She understands. You can trust her. She deserves to know the truth.
Everyone does, Maddie said quietly. Eventually.
Well, Az said, then paused to sip his tea. I suppose we'll have to tell you, Tally.
Tell me what?
David took a deep breath.
The truth about being pretty.
Pretty minds.
We were doctors, Az began. Cosmetic surgeons, to be precise, Maddie said. We've both performed the operation hundreds of times. And when we met, I had just been named to the Committee for Morphological Standards.
Tally's eyes widened. The Pretty Committee?
Maddie smiled at the nickname. We were preparing for a morphological congress. That's when all the cities share data on the operation.
Tally nodded. Cities worked very hard to stay independent of one another, but the Pretty Committee was a global institution that made sure pretties were all more or less the same. It would ruin the whole point of the operation if the people from one city wound up prettier than everyone else. Like most uglies, Tally had often indulged the fantasy that one day she might be on the committee and help decide what the next generation would look like. In school, of course, they always managed to make it sound really boring. All graphs and averages and measuring people's pupils when they looked at different faces.
At the same time, I was doing some independent research on anesthesia, Az said, trying to make the operation safer.
Safer? Tally asked.
A few people still die each year, as with any surgery, he said, from being unconscious so long, more than anything else.
Tally bit her lip. She'd never heard that.
Oh.
I found that there were complications from the anesthetic used in the operation,
tiny lesions in the brain, barely visible, even with the best machines.
Tali decided to risk sounding stupid.
What's a lesion?
Basically, it's a bunch of cells that don't look right, As said, like a wound or a cancer or just something that doesn't belong there.
But you couldn't just say that, David said. He rolled his eyes toward Tali.
Doctors.
Maddie ignored her son.
When Ash showed me his results, I started investigating. The local committee had millions of scans in its database. Not the stuff they put in medical textbooks, but raw data from pretties all over the world. The lesions turned up everywhere.
Tali frowned. You mean people were sick?
They didn't seem to be, and the lesions weren't cancerous because they didn't spread. Almost everyone had them, and they were always in exactly the same place.
She pointed to a spot on the top of her head.
A little bit to the left, dear, As said, dropping a white cube into his tea.
Maddie obliged him, then continued.
Most importantly, almost everyone all over the world had these lesions. If they were a health hazard, 99% of the population would show some kind of symptoms.
But they weren't natural? Tali asked.
No, only post-ops, pretties, I mean, had them, As said. No uglies did. They were definitely a result of the operation.
Tali shifted in her chair. The thought of a weird little mystery in everyone's brain made her queasy.
Did you find out what caused them?
Maddie sighed.
In one sense, we did. As and I looked very closely at all the negatives, that is, the few pretties who didn't have the lesions, and tried to figure out why they were different. What made them immune to the lesions? We ruled out blood type, gender, physical size, intelligence factors, genetic markers. Nothing seemed to account for the negatives. They weren't any different from everyone else.
Until we discovered an odd coincidence, As said.
Their jobs, Maddie said.
Jobs?
Every negative worked in the same sort of profession, As said. Firefighters, wardens, doctors, politicians, and anyone who worked for special circumstances.
Everyone with those jobs didn't have the lesions. All the other pretties did.
So you guys were okay?
As nodded. We tested ourselves, and we were negative.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here, Maddie said quietly.
What do you mean?
David spoke up. The lesions aren't an accident, Tali. They're part of the operation. Just like all the bone sculpting and skin scraping. It's part of the way being pretty changes you.
But you said not everyone has them.
Maddie nodded.
In some pretties, they disappear, or are intentionally cured, in those whose professions require them to react quickly, like working in an emergency room or putting out a fire, those who deal with conflict and danger.
People who face challenges, David said.
Tali let out a slow breath, remembering her trip to the smoke.
What about rangers?
As nodded. I believe I had a few rangers in my database, all negatives.
Tali remembered the look on the faces of the rangers who had saved her. They had an unfamiliar confidence and surety, like David's, completely different from the new pretties she and Paris had always made fun of.
Paris.
Tali swallowed, tasting something more bitter than tea in the back of her throat. She tried to remember how Paris had acted when she'd crashed the Garbo Mansion party. She'd been so ashamed of her own face, it was hard to remember anything specific about Paris. He looked so different, and, if anything, he seemed older, more mature. But in some way, they hadn't connected. It was as if he'd become a different person. Was it only because since his operation they had lived in different worlds? Or had it been something more? She tried to imagine Paris coping out here in the smoke, working with his hands and making his own clothes.
The old, ugly Paris would have enjoyed the challenge. But what about pretty Paris? Her head felt light, as if the house were in an elevator heading swiftly downward. "What do the lesions do?" she asked.
"We don't know exactly," Az said. "But we've got some pretty good ideas," David said.
"Just suspicions," Maddie said.
Az looked uncomfortably down into his tea.
"You were suspicious enough to run away," Tally said.
"We had no choice," Maddie said. "Not long after our discovery, special circumstances paid a visit. They took our data and told us not to look any further or we'd lose our licenses. It was either run away or forget everything we'd found."
"And it wasn't something we could forget," Az said.
Tally turned to David. He sat beside his mother, grim-faced, his cup of tea untouched before him. His parents were still reluctant to say everything they suspected, but she could tell that David saw no need for caution.
"What do you think?" she asked him.
"Well, you know all about how the Rusties lived, right?" he said. "War and crime and all that."
"Of course. They were crazy. They almost destroyed the world."
"And that convinced people to pull the cities back from the wild, to leave nature alone," David recited. "And now everybody is happy because everyone looks the same. They're all pretty. No more Rusties, no more war, right?"
"Yeah. In school, they say it's all really complicated, but that's basically the story."
He smiled grimly. "Maybe it's not so complicated. Maybe the reason war and all that other stuff went away is that there are no more controversies, no disagreements, no people demanding change. Just masses of smiling pretties, and a few people left to run things."
Tally remembered crossing the river to New Pretty Town, watching them have their endless fun. She and Paris used to boast they'd never wind up so idiotic, so shallow. But when she'd seen him...
"Becoming pretty doesn't just change the way you look," she said.
"No," David said. "It changes the way you think."
Burning Bridges. They stayed up late into the night, talking with Az and Maddie about their discoveries, their escape into the wild, and the founding of the smoke. Finally, Tally had to ask the question that had been on her mind since she'd first seen them.
"So, how did you two change yourselves back? I mean, you were pretty, and now you're..."
"Ugly?" Az smiled. "That part was simple. We're experts in the physical part of the operation. When surgeons sculpt a pretty face, we use a special kind of smart plastic to shape the bones. When we change new pretties to middle or late, we add a trigger chemical to that plastic, and it becomes softer, like clay."
"Ew," Tally said, imagining her face suddenly softening so she could squish it around to a different shape.
"With daily doses of this trigger chemical, the plastic will gradually melt away and be absorbed into the body. Your face goes back to where it started, more or less."
Tally's eyebrows rose. "More or less?"
"We can only approximate the places where bone was shaved away, and we can't make big changes, like someone's height, without surgery. Maddie and I have all the non-cosmetic benefits of the operation. Impervious teeth, perfect vision, disease resistance. But we look pretty close to the way we would have without the operation. As far as the fat that was sucked out," he patted his stomach, "that proves very easy to replace."
"But why? Why would you want to be ugly? You were doctors, so there was nothing wrong with your brains, right?"
"Our minds are fine," Maddie answered, "but we wanted to start a community of people who didn't have the lesions. People who were free of pretty thinking. It was the only way to see what difference the lesions really made. That meant we had to gather a group of uglies. Young people, recruited from the cities." Tally nodded.
So you had to become ugly too. Otherwise, who'd trust you?
We refined the trigger chemical, created a once-a-day pill. Over a few months, our old faces came back.
Maddie looked at her husband with a twinkle in her eye.
It was a fascinating process, actually.
It must have been, Tally said. What about the lesions? Can you create a pill that cures them?
They were both silent for a moment. Then Maddie shook her head. We didn't find any answers before special circumstances showed up. Az and I are not brain specialists. We've worked on the question for 20 years without success. But here, in the smoke, we've seen the difference that staying ugly makes.
I've seen that myself, Tally said, thinking of the differences between Paris and David.
Az raised an eyebrow. You catch on pretty fast, then.
But we know there's a cure, David said.
How?
There has to be, Maddie said. Our data showed that everyone has the lesions after their first operation. So when someone winds up in a challenging line of work, the authorities somehow cure them. The lesions are removed secretly, maybe even fixed with a pill like the bone plastic, and the brains return to normal. There must be a simple cure.
You'll find it one day, David said quietly.
We don't have the right equipment, Maddie said, sighing. We don't even have a pretty human subject to study.
But hang on, Tally said. You used to live in a city full of pretties. When you became doctors, your lesions went away. Didn't you notice that you were changing?
Maddie shrugged. Of course we did. We were learning how the human body worked, and how to face the huge responsibility of saving lives. But it didn't feel as if our brains were changing. It felt like growing up.
Oh, but when you looked around at everyone else, how come you didn't notice they were brain damaged?
Az smiled. We didn't have much to compare our fellow citizens with. Only a few colleagues who seemed different from most people. More engaged. But that was hardly a surprise. History would indicate that the majority of people have always been sheep. Before the operation, there were wars and mass hatred and clear-cutting. Whatever these lesions make us, it isn't a far cry from the way humanity was in the Rusty era. These days were just a bit easier to manage.
Having the lesions is normal now, Maddie said. We're all used to the effects.
Tally took a deep breath, remembering Sol and Ellie's visit. Her parents had been so sure of themselves, and yet in a way so clueless. But they'd always seemed that way, wise and confident, and at the same time disconnected from whatever ugly, real-life problems Tally was having. Was that pretty brain damage? Tally had always thought that was just how parents were supposed to be. For that matter, shallow and self-centered was how brand new pretties were supposed to be. As an ugly, Paris had made fun of them. But he hadn't waited a moment to join in the fun. No one ever did. So how could you tell how much was the operation and how much was just people going along with the way things had always been? Only by making a whole new world, which is just what Maddie and Az had begun to do. Tally wondered what had come first, the operation or the lesions. Was becoming pretty just the bait to get everyone under the knife? Or were the lesions merely a finishing touch on being pretty? Perhaps the logical conclusion of everyone looking the same was everyone thinking the same. She leaned back in her chair. Her eyes were blurry, and her stomach clenched whenever she thought about Paris, her parents, and every other pretty she'd ever met. How different were they, she wondered. How did it feel to be pretty? What was it really like behind those big eyes and exquisite features?
You look tired, David said. She laughed softly. It seemed like weeks since she and David had arrived there. A few hours of conversation had changed her world.
Maybe a little.
I guess we'd better go, Mom.
Of course, David. It's late,
and Tali has a lot to digest. Maddie and Az stood, and David helped Tali up from the chair. She said goodbye to them in a daze, flinching inside when she recognized the expression in their old and ugly faces. They felt sorry for her. Sad that she'd had to learn the truth. Sad that they'd been the ones to tell her. After 20 years, maybe they'd gotten used to the idea, but they still understood that it was a horrible fact to learn. 99% of humanity had had something done to their brains, and only a few people in the world knew exactly what.
You see why I wanted you to meet my parents?
Yeah, I guess I do. Tali and David were in the darkness, climbing the ridge back toward the smoke, the sky full of stars now that the moon had set.
You might have gone back to the city not knowing.
Tali shivered, realizing how close she had come so many times. In the library, she'd actually opened the pendant, almost holding it to her eye. And if she had, the specials would have arrived within hours.
I couldn't stand that, David said.
But some uglies must go back, right?
Sure, they get bored with camping out, and we can't make them stay.
You let them go? When they don't even know what the operation really means? David stopped and took hold of Tali's shoulder, anguish on his face.
Neither do we. And if we told everyone what we suspect, most of them wouldn't believe us. But others would go charging back to the city to rescue their friends. And eventually, the cities would find out what we were saying and would do everything in their power to hunt us down.
They already are, Tali said to herself. She wondered how many other spies the specials had blackmailed into looking for the smoke, how many times they'd come close to finding it. She wanted to tell David what they were up to, but how? She couldn't explain that she had come here as a spy, or David would never trust her again. She sighed. That would be the perfect way to stop herself from coming between him and Shay.
You don't look very happy.
Tali tried to smile. David had shared his biggest secret with her. She should tell him hers. But she wasn't brave enough to say the words.
It's been a long night. That's all. He smiled back. Don't worry. It won't last forever.
Tali wondered how long it was until dawn. In a few hours, she'd be eating breakfast alongside Shay and Croy, and everyone else she had almost betrayed, almost condemned to the operation. She flinched at the thought.
Hey, David said, lifting her chin with his palm. You did great tonight. I think my parents were impressed.
Huh? With me?
Of course, Tali. You understood immediately what all this means. Most people can't believe it at first. They say the authorities would never be so cruel.
She smiled grimly.
Don't worry. I believe it.
Exactly. I've seen a lot of city kids come through here. You're different from the rest of them. You can see the world clearly, even if you did grow up spoiled. That's why I had to tell you. That's why...
Tali looked into his eyes and saw that his face was glowing again, touching her in that pretty way she'd felt before.
That's why you're beautiful, Tali. The words made her dizzy for a moment, like the falling feeling of looking into a new pretty's eyes.
Me?
Yes. She laughed, shaking her head clear.
What,
with my thin lips and my eyes too close together?
Tali,
and my frizzy hair and squashed down nose?
Don't say that.
His fingers brushed her cheeks where the scratches were almost healed, and ran fleetingly across her lips. She knew how calloused his fingertips were, as hard and rough as wood. But somehow, their caresses felt soft and tentative.
That's the worst thing they do to you, to any of you. Whatever those brain lesions are all about, the worst damage is done before they even pick up the knife. You're all brainwashed into believing you're ugly.
We are. Everyone is.
So you think I'm ugly?
She looked away. It's a pointless question. It's not about individuals.
Yes, it is, Tally. Absolutely.
I mean, no one can really be... You see, biologically, there are certain things we all...
The words choked off.
You really think I'm beautiful?
Yes.
More beautiful than Shay?
They both stood silent, their mouths gaping. The question had popped out of Tally before she could think. How had she uttered something so horrible?
I'm sorry.
David shrugged, turned away.
It's a fair question.
Yes, I do.
Do what?
I think you're more beautiful than Shay.
He said it so matter-of-factly, as if talking about the weather. Tally's eyes closed, every bit of exhaustion from the long day crashing into her at once. She saw Shay's face. Too thin, eyes too far apart, and an awful feeling welled up inside her. The warmth she'd felt from David was crushed by it. Every day of her life, she'd insulted other uglies and had been insulted in return. Fatty, pig eyes, bony, zits, freak. All the names uglies called one another, eagerly and without reserve. But equally, without exception, so that no one felt shut out by some irrelevant mischance of birth. And no one was considered to be even remotely beautiful, privileged because of a random twist in their genes. That was why they'd made everyone pretty in the first place. This was not fair.
Don't say that. Please.
You asked me.
She opened her eyes. But it's horrible. It's wrong.
Listen, Tally. That's not what's important to me. What's inside you matters a lot more.
But first, you see my face. You react to symmetry, skin tone, the shape of my eyes. And you decide what's inside me, based on all your reactions. You're programmed to.
I'm not programmed. I didn't grow up in a city.
It's not just culture, it's evolution.
He shrugged in defeat, the anger draining from his voice.
Maybe some of it is, he chuckled tiredly. But you know what first got me interested in you?
Tally took a deep breath, trying to calm herself.
What?
The scratches on your face.
She blinked.
The what?
The scratches. He touched her cheek again. She shook away the electric feeling his fingers left behind.
That's nuts. Imperfect skin is a sign of a poor immune system.
David laughed. It was a sign that you'd been in an adventure, Tally, that you'd bashed your way across the wild to get here. To me, it was a sign that you had a good story to tell.
Her outrage faded.
A good story?
Tally shook her head,
a laugh building inside her. Actually, my face got scratched up back in the city, hoverboarding through some trees, at high speed. Some adventure, huh?
It does tell a story, though. As I thought the first time I saw you. You take risks.
His fingers wound into a lock of her singed hair.
You're still taking risks.
I guess so.
Standing here in the darkness with David felt like a risk. Like everything was about to change again. He still had the look in his eye. The pretty look. Maybe he could really see past her ugly face. Maybe what was inside her did matter to him more than anything else.
Tally stepped onto a fist-sized stone on the path and found an uneasy balance on it. They were eye to eye now.
She swallowed. You really think I'm beautiful?
Yes. What you do, the way you think, makes you beautiful.
A strange thought crossed her mind, and Tally said, I'd hate it if you got the operation.
She couldn't believe she was saying it. Even if they didn't do your brain, I mean.
Gee, thanks. His smile shone in the darkness. I don't want you to look like everyone else.
I thought that was the point of being pretty.
I did too. She touched his eyebrow where the line of white cut through it. So how'd you get that scar?
An adventure, a good story. I'll tell you sometime.
You promise?
I promise.
Good. She leaned forward, her weight pressing into him, and as her feet gradually slipped down the stone, their lips met. His arms wrapped around her and pulled her closer. His body was warm in the pre-dawn cold, and formed something solid and certain in Tali's shaken reality. She held on tightly, amazed at how intense the kiss became. A moment later, she pulled away to take a breath, thinking for just a second how odd this was. Uglies did kiss each other, and a lot more, but it always felt as if nothing counted until you were pretty. But this counted. She pulled David toward her again, her fingers digging into the leather of his jacket. The cold, her aching muscles, the awful things she had just learned, all of it just made this feeling stronger. Then one of his hands touched the back of her neck, traced the slender chain there, down to the cold, hard metal of the pendant. She stiffened, and their lips parted.
"What about this?" he said.
She enclosed the metal heart in her fist, her other arm still wrapped around him. There was no way she could tell David about Dr. Cable now. He would pull away, maybe forever. The pendant was still between them. Suddenly, Tali knew what to do. It was perfect. "Come with me."
"Where?"
"To the smoke. I have to show you something." She pulled him up the slope, scrambling until they reached the top of the ridge.
"Are you okay?" he asked, panting. "I didn't mean to..."
"I'm great." She smiled broadly at him, then peered down on the smoke. A single campfire burned near the center of town, where the night watch gathered to warm up every hour or so.
"Come on."
Suddenly, it seemed important to get there fast, before her certainty faded, before the warm feeling inside her could give way to doubt. She scrambled down between the painted stones of the hoverboard path, David struggling to keep up. When her feet reached level ground, she ran, heedless of the dark and silent huts on either side, seeing only the firelight ahead. Her speed was effortless, like hoverboarding on an open straightaway. Tali ran until she reached the fire, skidding to a halt against its cushion of heat and smoke. She reached up to unclasp the pendant's chain. "Tali?" David ran up, panting, confusion on his face. He tried breathlessly to say more.
"No," she said. "Just watch."
The pendant swung by its chain in her fist, sparkling red in the firelight. Tali focused all her doubts on it, all her fear of discovery, her terror at Dr. Cable's threats. She clutched the pendant, squeezing the unyielding metal until her muscles ached, as if forcing into her own mind the almost unthinkable fact that she might really remain ugly for life. But somehow not ugly at all. She opened her hand and threw the necklace into the center of the fire. It landed on a crackling log, the metal heart burning black for a moment, then gradually turning yellow and white in the heat. Finally, a small pop came from it, as if something trapped inside had exploded, and it slid from the log and disappeared among the flames. She turned to David, her vision spotted with sinuous shapes from staring into the fire. He coughed at the smoke.
"Wow, that was dramatic."
Tali suddenly felt foolish. "Yeah, I guess so." He moved closer.
"You really meant that. Whoever gave it to you
doesn't matter anymore."
"What if they come?"
"No one's coming. I'm sure of it." David smiled and gathered Tali into a hug, pulling her away from the edge of the fire. Well, Tally Youngblood, you certainly know how to make a point. You know, I would have believed you if you just told me,
no, I had to do it like this. I had to burn it, to know for sure.
He kissed her forehead and laughed.
You're beautiful.
When you say that, I almost, she whispered. Suddenly, a wave of exhaustion struck Tally, as if her last bit of energy had gone into the fire with the pendant. She was tired from the wild run here, from the long night with Maddie and Az, from a hard day's work. And tomorrow she would have to face Shay again and explain what had happened between her and David. Of course, the moment Shay saw the pendant was gone from around Tally's neck, she would know. But at least she'd never know the real truth. The pendant was charred beyond recognition, its true purpose hidden forever. Tally slumped into David's arms, closing her eyes. The image of the glowing heart was burned into her vision. She was free. Dr. Cable would never come here now, and no one could ever take her away from David or the smoke, or do to Tally's brain whatever the operation did to Pretty's. She was no longer an infiltrator. She finally belonged here. Tally found herself crying. David silently walked her to the bunkhouse. At the door, he leaned forward to kiss her, but she pulled away and shook her head. Shay was just inside. Tally would have to talk to her tomorrow. It wouldn't be easy, but Tally knew she could face anything now. David nodded, kissed his finger, and traced one of the remaining scratches on her cheek. See you tomorrow, he whispered. Where are you going?
For a walk. I need to think.
Don't you ever sleep?
Not tonight, he smiled.
Tally kissed his hand and slipped inside, where she kicked off her shoes and crawled into bed with her clothes on, falling asleep in seconds, as if the weight of the world had been lifted from her shoulders. The next morning, she awoke to chaos. The sounds of running, shouting, and the scream of machines invading her dreams. Out the bunkhouse window, the sky was full of hover cars. Special circumstances had arrived.
Part 3. Into the Fire. Beauty is that Medusa's head, which men go armed to seek and sever. It is most deadly when most dead, and dead will stare and sting forever. Archibald MacLeish, Beauty. Invasion. Tally turned from the window and saw nothing but empty beds. She was alone in the bunkhouse. She shook her head, foggy from sleep and disbelief. The ground rumbled beneath her bare feet, and the bunkhouse shuddered around her. Suddenly, the plastic in one of the windows shattered, and the muffled cacophony from outside rushed in to batter her ears. The entire building shook as if it would collapse. Where was everyone? Had they already fled the smoke, leaving her there to face this invasion alone? Tally ran for the door and threw it open. Before her, a hover car was landing, blinding her for a moment with a face full of dust. She recognized the machine's cruel lines from the special circumstances car that had first taken her to see Dr. Cable. But this one was equipped with four shimmering blades, one each where the wheels of a ground car would be, a cross between a normal hover car and the Ranger's helicopter. It could travel anywhere, Tally realized, inside a city or out in the wild. She remembered Dr. Cable's words. We'll be there in a few hours. Tally forced the thought from her head. This attack couldn't have anything to do with her. The hover car struck the dusty ground with a thud. This was no time to stand there wondering. She turned and ran. The camp was a chaos of smoke and running figures. Cooking fires had been blown from their pits, and scattered embers burned everywhere. Two of the encampment's big buildings were ablaze. Chickens and rabbits scampered underfoot, dust and ashes coiled in rampant whirlwinds.
Dozens of Smokies ran about, some trying to put out the fires, some trying to escape, some simply panicking. Through everything else, the forms of cruel pretties moved. Their gray uniforms passed like fleeting shadows through the confusion, graceful and unhurried, as if unaware of the chaos around them. They set about subduing the panicking Smokies. They moved in a blur, without any weapons that Tali could see, leaving everyone in their wake lying on the ground, bound and dazed. They were superhumanly fast and strong. The special operation had given them more than just terrible faces. Near the mess hall, about 2 dozen Smokies were making a stand, holding off a handful of specials with axes and makeshift clubs. Tali made her way toward the fight, and the incongruous smells of breakfast reached her through the choking haze of smoke. Her stomach growled. Tali realized that she had slept through the breakfast call, too exhausted to wake up with everyone else. The specials must have waited until most of the Smokies were gathered in the mess hall before launching their invasion. Of course, they wanted to capture as many Smokies as possible in a single stroke. The specials weren't attacking the large group at the mess hall. They waited patiently in a ring around the building while their numbers increased, more hover cars landing every minute. If anyone tried to get past the cordon, they reacted swiftly, disarming and incapacitating whoever dared to run. But most of the Smokies were too shocked to resist, paralyzed by the terrible faces of their opponents. Even here, most people had never seen a cruel pretty. Tali pinned herself against a building, trying to disappear next to a stack of firewood. She shielded her eyes from the dust storm, searching for an escape route. There was no way to get into the center of the smoke, where her hoverboard lay on the broad roof of the trading post, charging in the sun. The forest was the only way out. A stretch of uncleared trees lay at the closest edge of town, only a 20-second dash away. But a special stood between her and the border of dense trees and brush, waiting to intercept any stray Smokies. The woman's eyes scanned the approach to the forest, her head moving from side to side in a weirdly regular motion, like someone watching a slow-motion tennis match without much interest. Tali crept closer, staying pressed against the building. A hover car passed overhead, blowing a maelstrom of dust and loose wood chips into her eyes. When she could see again, Tali found an ugly crouching next to her, against the wall. "Hey," he hissed. She recognized the sagging features, the bitter expression. It was the boss. "Young lady, we have a problem." His harsh voice cut through the cacophony of the attack. She glanced in the direction of the waiting special. "Yeah, I know." Another hover car roared over them, and he pulled her around the corner of the building and down behind a drum that collected rainwater from the gutters. "You noticed her too?" He grinned, showing a missing tooth. "Maybe if we both run at once, one of us might make it, if the other puts up a fight." Tali swallowed. "I guess." She peered out at the special, who stood as calmly as a crumbly waiting for a pleasure fairy. "But they're pretty fast."
"That depends."
He dropped the duffel bag from his shoulder. "There are 2 things I keep ready for emergencies." The boss unzipped the bag and pulled out a plastic container big enough for a sandwich.
"This is one."
He popped open one corner of the top, and a puff of dust rose up. A second later, a wave of fire rushed into Tali's head. She covered her face, eyes watering, and tried to cough up the finger of flame that had crawled down her throat.
"Not bad, eh?" The boss chuckled. "That's pure habanero pepper, dried and ground down to dust. Not too bad in beans, but hell in your eyes."
Tali blinked away her tears and managed to speak. "Are you nuts?"
"The other thing is this bag, which contains a representative sample of 200 years of rusty era visual culture. Priceless and irreplaceable artifacts. So which do you want?"
"Huh?"
Do you want the habanero pepper or the bag of magazines? Do you want to get caught while taking out our special friend? Or save a precious piece of human heritage?